Hey, by the way, quick reminder, our second annual Pride Zine submissions are still open. In honor of Pride Month, this is something we've done in the past, we're releasing a limited print zine to raise money for charity. So if you want to participate, we're looking for art, traditional, digital, cosplay, pottery. But you got to like be able to put it in an image form so that we can print it. And also, we're looking for art from all seasons. That is plenty of season one art. But what about the other ones? By the way, Lambda Legal is the charity once again. Check it out. More information in the description of this episode.
Hey, it's okay. They can't hurt you here.
Chill.
They can't find you here. For now, at least.
What did you do?
I've got you. As far as I'm concerned, we were hanging out all day.
Wow.
Whoa. Okay. You're good.
Anthony's a cool friend. 100%. You can call on Anthony for anything.
I think you would do the same.
Anthony,
If I came to you with blood on my hands and said, we were playing video games with your daughter all day today, you'd probably go like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, bring Matt's daughter. I was
with you, and then you brought my daughter. Yeah. It's like, why is she in this?
Why is she? Because if I go down, she goes down.
He needs some. It's you're his friend, but he needs some pressure.
Yeah.
Dorothy's no rat.
You let me take you down with you. You would not let the same happen to Dorothy.
Anthony's always looking for that leverage.
Yeah. I'm like John Travolta in that regard. Anyway, this is Dungeons and Daddies.
What was the John Travolta reference?
It's a big thing in Scientology to have leverage over people.
Oh, like with the like when they're doing the
collateral.
Compromise, basically. Yeah. Which is also funny because in Battlefield Earth, the main bad guy always talks about leverage. So I guess,
don't like to think about John Travolta being a Scientologist. No. I like to think about him being the fun guy with the big plane who said a Delta Zine.
Okay.
I like to think of him as the cool guy dancing.
I like to think of him as a
cool dancer.
With no Scientology, none of that happens. That's why I'm signing up to be just like John Travolta.
Okay, I lied. This is not a safe space. We're trying to get you to join Scientology.
Like, what did Christianity give us? VeggieTales. What did Scientology give us? Mission Impossible. So,
that's fair.
Have you guys ever been to the Museum of Psychiatric Death on Hollywood Boulevard?
Is that the Scientology thing?
My mother-in-law and my wife's stepdad were just bored in Hollywood one day, and they just wandered in.
Yeah.
And they were like, huh,
this is weird. In 2011, 2012, I was there, and I was here for the summer with an internship, and I was
for the summer.
What the fuck?
What?
And I was walking.
I haven't thought about that song in a while.
You said Wetrix.
I did say Wetrix earlier. Beth, please continue.
Yeah, and I saw that, and I was like, that's a crazy name for a museum, and I'm interested in psychiatry. And so I went in, and it's nuts. And I was like, this is actually crazy. And then at the end, basically, there's just like a bunch of dioramas of people dying from things that they do in psychiatry, ECT, insulin shock therapy, stuff like that, which all happened, you know. Yeah. It's like they got a point.
Scientology also killed people. Shelley. How you doing, Shelley?
And at the end, they want your like social security number and all of your information. And I'm like, I will not be giving this out.
Crazy.
And so
your social security number?
They wanted everything.
Have you guys ever sat down and watched the presentation that
what?
They do? The like yearly presentation where David Miscavige just talks to the entire stadium full of people?
Oh, no.
It's really interesting.
Oh, I should.
Because it looks like it's presented like an award show, but it's just a big podium and only him talking for like 3 hours. And everybody, it just cuts to Isaac Hayes in the audience. He's like, yeah! Everybody's just fucking psyched.
This is where I need my own cult. This whole museum was put on by the like Concerned Citizens for Human Rights or something like that,
sure.
Which sounds pretty innocuous. But then I looked it up and it's Scientology.
It's the sound of a fake innocuous organization. You know what I mean?
It's like Focus on the Family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too on the nose.
This is to clarify for anyone who hasn't been to Los Angeles, this is a museum run by Scientology about why psychiatry is bad.
Yes.
That you go, huh, and then you go in, and by the time you exit, they have all your information.
Yes.
So if you see it, maybe hit up the In-N-Out on Hollywood.
I didn't realize
Sunset
it was run by
instead.
Scientology.
Yes, it is.
And I was like, I thought it was run by these concerned citizens.
I thought it was just like, you know, just like a cool, weird museum.
We're not here to talk about
what are we here to
Dianetics, the book specifically. I think Scientology's gotten away from a lot of the principles initially.
Now, hold on.
Has anybody done a podcast that's just a Scientology book club? Like, you guys want to read all the books?
I would be 100% certain that Scientology has that covered.
But that's not the content I want to listen to. I want to listen to us read Scientology
books. Looking like most of these are just short Scientology takedowns.
I want the fiction of L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah, because most prolific writers in
history. Yeah, he wrote all the time.
I don't want the Battlestar Galactica stuff. I want
the Battlefield Earth stuff?
Have you walked past their stores? It would be like if you walk past like a Christian bookshop and there's like multiple Bibles. They have like so many books.
Yeah, there are multiple Bibles.
No, there's like the Bible. There's two books in the Bible, sure.
But there's the King James Bible. There's the Bible. There's the Bible for teens. There's the kid Bible.
Gutenberg Bible.
No, but like there's a lot.
Chicken soup for the Bible.
There's a lot of like Scientology books. There's a lot of books. True. Like that window is open and like they got the display. I'm like, that's a lot of books you got to read to get into this. So I'm just, you know, I want
a little bit like Warhammer in that respect.
They got my OCD brain. They almost got me. I'm like, you know what? Christianity, one book.
Scientology had minifigs, Matt would be good.
Could you imagine if Scientology got themselves an anime babe that they could do blind boxes?
Dude, if you made
Scientology almost got me because of their personality tests. You know I love a personality test.
Yeah, exactly. If you open up the Scientology books and they said, no, you're reading this backwards, you got to start from the other side and read right to left, and it was in manga volumes, like, you know they would get people.
My friend Yuli got an e-reader test on Hollywood Boulevard when we were kids.
Oh, that's awesome.
And apparently the person giving it didn't know what the grift was because she was like, okay, you're good. And just like let him go.
That's awesome.
No,
anybody, I would believe it would be Yuli.
Yeah. I would believe that too.
Feeden free. Anyway,
fucking blow up that stress test, dude. I put those things
just
on.
Just squeeze them so hard they break.
Sparks would be flying off of it.
Be like Mo in the lie detector.
Look like friggin' Doc Brown at the end of
My favorite thing about everybody talking about is how stupid Back to the Future 3 is, where it's like the whole lesson of that fucking of the whole series is like, hey, don't go back in time and like mess with shit, right?
Yeah.
And like that's the thing. And then he comes back and then literally his final words are like, now I'm gonna get in my fucking train time machine and go wild. Like literally he's just like at the end of the movie, he's just like, so long, where are you going? He's like, oh, no, see some dinosaurs. Like, wait, what?
Rules for thee, but not for me, is the actual
thing. It's insane. It's insane. It's like the wildest ending.
Happens in Back to the Future 1. Actually, Back to the Future 2. Actually, happens in the third movie as well. This is a show about season 4 of Dungeons & Daddies. This was episode 5 where you went to an arcade.
Bloaters!
Bloaters.
I was so excited with the word bloaters that I lost my carefully cultivated accent.
Bye-bye, Biden.
Yeah, when David Bloaters came up, I felt the air go out of the room because I was like, ooh, here comes the name. It was one of those difficult, like, is this about to be funny? And it was David Bloaters, and everybody was kind of like, okay. And then Freddie made it all worthwhile. So thank you, Freddie.
Well, I was just so genuinely, because you know I love Dave & Buster's.
Yes.
And so it's like I was treating the name Dave & Bloaters with respect as an homage to one of my favorite establishments.
Beth, question. As a Dave & Buster's fan,
yeah.
Do you do ticket
we
redemption?
We call them Busters.
As a Buster.
It's really confusing.
As a certified Buster.
Do I do ticket redemption?
Yeah, do you play
no,
the ticket
No, I'm in
games?
It for the love of the games.
No, but, oh, so you don't, what do
I
you
don't
do?
Even get prizes.
What do you,
what
do you
do
with the tickets?
What?
Do you give them
she
to
puts
a
on sunglasses
child?
And finds the saddest looking kid and goes, hey, these are for you.
I've done
and then
that.
Walks off into the fucking sunset.
Kids love that shit.
Yeah. Pay it forward, kid.
Yeah.
Did I tell you that I had my graduation party in high school to Chuck E. Cheese?
No.
That's awesome.
Fuck yeah, dude.
It was my best friend and I, and then literally the entire, it must have been like 20 people, all working the games. The skee ball, the whack-a-mole.
Fuck yeah.
Together, we had enough, finally, after like 3 hours, enough tickets to buy the RC car.
Whoa!
Yeah, so I actually walked out of a Chuck E. Cheese with the big prize, and it took
that.
Did you, like,
awesome.
Get it on even days, and they got it on, like, how did that split work?
We're not friends anymore.
I also have a pretty good Chuck E. Cheese story. It was my cousin's birthday, and I don't remember anything except for at the end, my uncle was tipping the person playing Chuck E. Cheese by going up to a manager, handing them a 20 and being like, this is for the rat. But then the manager, who's just like this like stick beanpole of a man, like very like quiet, he's like, it's a mouse, sir.
Died. Here's a little cheese for the mouse.
Yeah. There's a little cheese. That's such a, like a James Gandolfini Sopranos move. This is for the rat.
It's a mouse, sir.
And then you shoot the guy at the ticket counter. So my favorite moment in this episode was easily, and I want to know what was going through the dude that's going through the mind of a Freddy Wong, a sentient paintbrush remembering war.
Oh my God.
Tell me more about that.
That was free association. That was, sometimes I feel like I'm riding the edge of a wave. I'll tell you right now, that was the edge of a wave.
Sometimes Freddy is the paintbrush remembering war.
I think that could be a cool game.
It could be a cool game. I don't know. There's just something about that whole genre.
There was a game that basically was a puzzle game, and it was like, but I'm pretty sure it was one of those.
There's been a lot of paint games.
There's been a lot of remembering war games.
Gora Gora. That's the game that when
that's
you said
not a
that,
game name.
Well, hey, it's also not really about war. It's just kind of a bunch of cool visuals and shit.
Yeah, but it was like this is a sentient paintbrush remembering war.
I remember playing
the DLC
Gora.
Of The Witcher 3 has a really cool painting. What's the name of the game?
Gora Gora. It's amazing. It's one of the best. So I want to say for anybody out there who thinks that we're shitting on Annapurna games and indie games, I mean, we're only shitting on the bad ones because Gora Gora fucking rules. A bunch of Annapurna's games are awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them should have been short films.
I don't even know why I was. I don't even know what I was doing.
It's because anytime something gets enough of a critical mass that it has a identifiable sheen to it. In the same way, like A24 movies have that now. So it's like,
I think I was even more doing it. There was SNL's, you know, whatever. But there was that one sketch they had where they were all talking about their favorite movies and then somebody brings up Moonlight and they all say they love Moonlight, but they clearly none have seen Moonlight. It's just like that vibe. It's like, well, that's a great movie. It's like, it's not a diss on Moonlight. It's, if anything, it's a diss on just like the fact that
they have a lot of uncultured
swine. Yeah, exactly. Most people just don't want to fucking engage with difficult stuff.
No, but I think that these types of games really come down to a real tension at the heart of, and Anthony, I'd be curious on your thoughts on this as well. I think that they speak to an underlying tension in interactive games, which is that, you know, a lot of these are exploring themes that we don't necessarily see. But as a gamer, I do just want to see boobs and shoot guns. So how do you bridge that?
So here's, I was going to say exactly like that, but it's kind of similar where it's like, I always had this like, and so this is a me problem. It's not the game's problem. But for example, like I saw the trailer for like Skate Story. I was like, yo, like a fucking like Tony Hawk downhill, like psychedelic looking thing. Like I want, and then they're like, and it talks about the childhood trauma. Like, nah! Like, I don't want that.
I just want to kickflip.
It's like, I know there's going to be a cutscene before I start skating. Like, what the fuck?
No, I have this problem now. Literally, I just got Cairn, which is the climbing game. I'm like,
I stopped
cool.
like 5 seconds into it.
Sick climbing game. And I'm like, cutscene? What cutscene could that be?
Oh, no.
And then it's just like,
the silent protagonist is sad about something? Bro.
Oh, she was sad.
Not only is she sad about something, she's kind of annoying the whole time. I'm like, I just wanted Crux the sick rock.
Look, I'm not saying, maybe it's just because of replaying Mario Wonder. All I'm saying is that game,
Mario doesn't have problems.
The princess gets captured, and then within 3 seconds, you're stomping on some Goombas. Like, it's like that game gets you into it. Like, yeah, Karin needs to start with her, like, dangling off the side of a cliff right away. Yeah.
But I mean, I think it gets to, like, the point of, like, which I think is, you know, why I'm, like, joking about, like, paintbrushes and war, which is, like, I think that certain mediums work really well for certain kinds of stories. Not to say that you can't tell certain stories or say certain things in certain and medium. You can, but there are things that are unique about things like video games that are, you know, the interactivity is part of it. Whereas like short film, stories, you know, fiction, poetry, these are all different expressions of like, you know, and God, it feels good to shoot a fucking gun.
So
I love
it
that.
It feels good to shoot a gun in a video
it's
game.
Appropriate.
I'm not. I'm tired of pretending it's not.
It's appropriate that our post-show talks just become more like we're all old. We're just old people ranting about
Absolutely.
The new world.
No, but I'll even go so far as to say it's fun in Roblox to start a nuclear reactor in a video game. But it's not going to be, you know, I mean, sometimes I think about Kojima. I think about Kojima and how he would have been probably happier as a film guy.
Oh, yeah. I think he said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wanted that. And then,
well, to be fair, Freddie did answer the question, which is Anthony was wondering what was going through his mind with
which
the
paintbrush. All of those things.
Yeah, all of those things.
That storm of mental energy produced one powerful joke. Stay tuned, listeners. What other comedic things might be coming out of my twisted mind?
That's like, guys, the joke of COVID. I'm like, why did that cost $400 to fix that? It's like, you didn't pay for the paid for the years of college.
$1 for the part.
Yeah.
This brings up a good question, which is, do you think that Freddy's going to make another video game joke this season?
Ooh, another one?
I don't know. That'd be crazy, man.
A lot. Oh, I was going to say, because actually back to the episode, because Anthony was, I can't tell if Anthony's always like seriously sad about it.
About what it's like to write video games. That's fine.
But yeah, I just want to say, I didn't respond to Dave and Bloaters because I'm an idiot, and I've been reading a lot of proper noun fantasy and mangas recently. So my brain's very, once I saw that capital D in Dave, my brain wasn't joke. My brain was like, Dave and bloaters. I wonder what those are. Like, I remember, like, who are the bloaters we're attacking? Like, I'm so immersed. I'm trying to stay so engrossed in the world building so I could keep track of it better. That's what it was. I didn't think it was a joke. I was just like, Dave and bloaters, put those in my fucking index so I can press pause and go into the fucking lore book later. And it wasn't until y'all said that, like, oh, nobody laughed at that. I was like, oh, he's trying to make a joke. So that's all.
I was trying to make a joke. I just thought it was a funny name that one of our listeners sent us. Thank you, listeners. And it led to floating boobs and Freddie going on a tear that did not involve anybody else in the room, which was great.
But I really like getting to see more of the Dale-Lila dynamic, which is, I think, very different parent. I mean, it's like a very different, like, sort of player NPC vibe than we've had. It reminds me, I think the closest is probably Glenn and Nick.
But this one is different. It's different because Glenn and Nick, everyone listening is like, well, but like, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Whereas you're like, Grandpa can do whatever he wants.
Well, there's a little bit less with Glenn and Nick, like, there's still this very much this intensity of like, Nick wants Glenn to think that he's awesome and Glenn like wants Nick to think that he's cool.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like Dale's just a guy who's real stoked for his.
I would argue that it's a combination of Glenn and Nick and Henry and the twins.
Oh, interesting.
Letting her do
just
her thing.
Just being a little bit permissive, but like under the guise of like being supportive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. I guess for me, the crucial loop of the Henry parenting style is set a boundary, watch it get bulldozed, and then pivot. Yeah. Whereas, like, Dale never does the boundary setting. Dale's never like, no, you don't think you should do that.
Henry's a lot.
I support you making your own mistakes.
Henry's parenting is pretty much equivalent to Donald Trump's foreign policy.
Yes, yeah.
Like, he sets red lights.
That. Yeah.
And it's just for talk. It's just to let them over it. No, I will say, not to be like, I feel not like the guinea pig, but it is, I will say.
You're first this time.
It is an interesting, like, actually having to get into it now. There's a lot of things about just the story that is very different, like, relationship-wise. Like, beyond one, like, your grandparents. So, like, I'm trying to make it definitely different than, like, your parents. Like, yes, there's a responsibility. I left, like, you know, I took her to the event and now she's gone. But it's like, yeah, it's less primal than, like, a parent losing their kid, right? Mm-hmm. And their relationship's very different. It's not as built. It's you're the cool one. You're the one who sees them on Christmas and gives them the present they want that the parent was like, that's too expensive. Like, that's, like, your
kind
of
dynamic.
That's
one of the things that worries me about the season, honestly, is the connection is just not as...
But it's
concrete.
A real connection. I mean,
it's real, but like when my grandparents died, I was like, okay.
Well, yeah, but that's your grandparents. These are our grandparents with our kids.
That's
like, we have different stories.
Yeah,
like, these
I
are
would
different,
say
yeah.
My personal grandma was able to hurt me in ways that,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
my
really?
Parents
okay.
could.
Yeah, like Dorothy.
Sorry, just like, your own personal grandma.
And, like, Dorothy is so close to both of her grandmas. Like, but then it's also, like, now that she's also an adult, it is this, like, yeah, it's just
it's
different.
Weird. Like, you, like, it'd be reasonable for her to be like, okay, leave.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
you did.
But that's fine, because I think that's interesting, because there is, like, it is going to be more about what the relationship actually is. Like, obviously, Dale loves Lila, and obviously, Lila loves Dale. Like, it's not the same as your parent, but, like, it is somebody that is
still a relationship.
Close to them. It's a relationship.
It's a very uncle-like kind
of relationship. It's just a different relationship.
Because also, I think there is still... Because, you know, Matt, you get to, at the very beginning of all of this, you talk about how it's like, that's got to be the greatest, worst thing you can do. As a grandparent, screw up a grandkid. Like,
yeah, that's just my anxiety. That's just my fear.
It's real anxiety there.
Yeah. And I think in a way, I think it'll be, and I'll be curious because, I mean, you are all going to crush it when you get to your grandkids. I think what I'm finding is, like, I feel like it's going to be more about the grandparents themselves because, yeah, there is not, the grandkid is not as much of your being as the kid is to the parent. Like, your kid is you, like as a parent. Looking at
well, especially
Will,
once
like, it is a lot of your identity.
Well,
is
especially
like,
once you're
my parents are so bad.
I mean, it's also especially once your grandkid is an adult.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, it's like Lila's in her 20s now, so she's her own human being, right?
So ultimately, Lila's gonna be a way like to explore like Dale to a degree.
That's what I'm interested in is because it's also like to me the thing with Dale is like again it's this very hey yeah I'm cool whatever yeah let's go and I'm like I'm so interested to see. When that cracks, if it cracks, if it doesn't crack, it's almost just as interesting in a sort of sad way. But it's like, I want to see the hood pop open on that. And I think the fact that Lila, she's a lot like him in that sense. Mm-hmm. Like, again, like I was so shocked by her total like amorality about which side of the war she's on. That she's like, yeah, I was getting bored, so I'm going to do this instead. And then Dale be like, oh, okay, yeah, I get that. I was like, which then again, I felt like this was my most Henry moment as Ralph, was to be like, I don't know, I'm kind of mad.
I was a big fan of you being like, I don't want to do that. Like just the presentation of like, here's a quest we could go on. You're just like, I don't want to. That's bad.
I'm excited to see it to develop because I do think it's a very new kind of conflict for the show. And I'm just stoked for it. And I really want to see where Dale is. And it's also like she drags her grandfather into this mess and then abandons him. Literally the second the bad guy shows up, she is a Kool-Aid man hole in the wall.
Yep.
And she's just out of there. And so it is like, I'm interested to see how that all comes to a head. Right.
Yeah.
And then one of the reasons I really like the idea of like, all of the grandkids essentially being grown-ups by the time we meet them is it's also like, I think it makes sense for in a show about that's just dealing with like, you know, like growing older and looking at the end of your life, like that you're seeing your legacy, right? Like you are seeing like what kind of like, this is the part of the story as a grandparent that you essentially don't get to see.
Yeah.
You maybe get to see your grandkid grow up to be 30 or something like that if you're lucky. But like for most of us, our grandchildren, like they're going to live lives we know nothing about.
Yeah.
Right. So you have this opportunity to see it and to help them and to, you know, maybe and learn something about yourself in the process. But I don't know. I'm very stoked. Yeah. I'm very excited. And I have no idea where it's going to go, which is one of my favorite feelings when we're doing the show.
I think to that point, too, it's like in addition to witnessing your legacy as a grandparent, I think, okay, let's see how to be careful with this. I've noticed that some grandparents have like regrets about how they parented their kids, thus regrets of how their kids are parenting their grandkids. And so I think that like the legacy of like what could have been shows up even more when you are experiencing your grandkid as an adult, because it's like not only are you witnessing your regrets, you're witnessing their regrets as well, and like how everything bad you did kind of maybe led to this.
Do you think that people have like that self-awareness to even see that second order, or is it just like, well, this is wrong?
I feel like in some ways it's like, because everybody's different, I feel like it's almost like a multiplier. Like if as a parent, how you think of your kid is going to be based off of like how you were parented, how you feel, how you respond to the way you were parented. Like, do you think you were parented well or bad, and then doing your best to do that. And then it's like, as a parent, and again, I only have a 7-year-old, so it's like I'm not in this state yet, but I'm beginning to get there when, you know, as your kid starts developing their own personality and everything. But like, I imagine as you get older, it's like you look at your kid and it's like different people have different reactions to that. Is it like, it's my fault that they're that way, or it's because of me, they're as good as they are, et cetera, et cetera. And then I feel like as whatever that person is, I feel like that effect can just be multiplied as a grandparent, which is like, ah, my good kid has a good grandkid. I must have done super well. Or you know, people's like, you know, it just feels like you have an ability to essentially look deeper. And then it's, I don't know, it just feels like you have to kind of let that go to a degree. It's like how well you parented your kid may not be.
How much of being a parent is you being worried about how good of a parent you are versus the kid itself?
Oh, yes.
Because
both things 100%.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just very concerned. I'm always worried about my kid, whether because I just want them to be happy.
Well, I
just
remember when I was a
kid.
Healthy.
And then when, depending on how I think that's going, it's like whether, then I'll worry about whether or not it's my fault or what could I fix? Or
there
is
all, because Andy is now getting to the age where like, because he's 3 and his personality is just blooming.
Yeah.
Like, you're really, I don't know what I thought in terms of like the nature nurture thing. Like how much is your kid just a blank slate that, you know, they're going to be a reflection of your choices and who you are. And like, they're going to just be purely like molded by that versus like, he's definitely putting out stuff that I'm like, this, you came out this way. Like you, this is you. Like, this is not me. This is you. And they surprise you in ways that you're just like, this is a totally different person than me. So then a lot of it is just, for me, at least it's less worried about, it's how do I help this person? Right. It's like, how do I, like, I, and then you're evaluating it in that context. So it's kind of the same question. Cause then they do stuff that just like blows you away. Like Andy, he will share his snack with us, which is like, I think in fully 30 years of my life, I've never like, I remember like my entire childhood. I don't think I ever once would have even occurred to me that my mom buys me chips. And I'm like, do you want one of my chips, mom? Never fucking happened once in a million years. And he's like, oh yeah, I want to share that with you. So yeah, I don't know, but I can't remember what we're talking about, but that's something that surprised me. Cause I think going into it, I thought I was going to be very much like running a scorecard, but it's like, once you're in it with them, it's just, it's like a dialogue almost.
if it's okay to change gears, yes. I want to talk about my favorite
part,
which was the villain reveal.
Which was not in the original version of this episode.
Which is crazy because I just thought it was so, it struck me as like a very unique villain, and it's both.
What makes you say that?
Because I wouldn't have thought of that.
Okay.
And the fact that he's both like immediately menacing in a visceral like proximity way, but also everywhere is very scary.
Yeah, I've been always been a big fan of your antagonist, Anthony, but this is one of your coolest ones yet. Like, especially like meeting them first as Jessica Messica, and that still being part of the personality. And I think it got cut from the episode in one of our, but like the eventually when we reveal a bit more of what the backstory and the ways and means of how the villain operates. It's
that's all cut.
Yeah, but we'll get to it eventually, and it's super fucking cool. So I'm very excited for people to see that.
If you have access to the uncuts, this might be an interesting one for you to listen to.
Oh, I didn't realize that got cut. I didn't listen to the last 5 minutes of the most recent.
No, not the last 5 minutes. Like the whole, like, because the original thing was like you guys going into the fucking January 6th and trying to solve that puzzle.
I'm just talking about the reveal that this guy is everywhere.
Like a hive mind. I've always been a hive mind.
See, the hive mind stuff is there because you see that like, oh, okay, they're connected to the two guards outside and, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. There was a bit more explanation of the backstory that I think we'll get to.
We'll definitely get to almost certainly this episode.
It's very fucking cool. No, I thought that was all dope as well. Genuinely, you know, I said this before, it's like I have no idea where the story is going to go, and like I'm really fucking stoked for that.
I also really like this idea for a villain because it's like, you know, you don't encounter villains that often that are like also innocent, because the hive mind, it's like these people didn't choose to be, you know, like these are people that are caught up in this like wave, and they, it's like they're not guilty of anything, but they're, you know, so it's like, yeah, I just think that's interesting.
We'll see if it ends up being interesting.
Okay.
Oh, I like the villain.
I thought it'd be interesting.
I was going to ask what the, sorry, this is kind of going, not a favorite moment or anything, but kind of going back to the discussion. I guess it's also with the villain too. When we're talking about like kind of the difference with the relationships, I was going to say, Anthony, what's your, how do you feel about, I think the thing that's going to be most interesting in this season is the stakes are different in terms of like, it's not just that they're a grandkids, but then they're going to be adults. So like with our kids, it's like we say, hey, you got to get home. Like we obviously got to bring you home. It's like they are full characters, the kids in season one, but they are also the MacGuffin. Like they are the plot point. Like they would work if they didn't have characters either. If they didn't have personalities in terms of the plot. But then like as adults, like if you're grown adult, like grandkid is like now.
You don't really have a leg to stand on at that point.
So it feels like the, and I see you kind of like playing with it, but it's like the immediate stakes of like the characters are going to be different throughout, are going to have to be different throughout the season to a degree, right?
Yes. You've correctly identified the one aspect of the season that keeps me up at night.
Ah.
Because if every time you go, they're another 10 years older. Because like for the moment for me where I was like, was when Lila was like, I've been fighting this war for 10 years. Have you ever been in war? So suddenly, immediately, you lost all authority in that moment.
That's good, though. So to me, I'm like, that's you've identified the jump that Evel Knievel is going to jump over.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's I don't know how to ride a bike.
And it's different than season
You'll
one.
Figure it out. Yeah. It's just like that. But that's to me, I'm like, I always have that same sort of freak out when I'm writing something and I come up with like, I'm like, oh, that, And then it's like, but inevitably, I'm like, you just got floored into it.
The reason I like it is because, and you gave me a hard time when I gave you my character sheet, because I think there was like, what's your motivation or whatever? Like, what's Dale's motivation? It's like, whatevs.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, fake's bad. I was like, that's a valid motivation, especially as an old person. Like, if you're 80 and like you feel like your kids are good and your grandkids are good and you're fucking on a cruise ship, like, what's this? Like, I don't know. Just fucking be cool till I die. Like, that's Dale's vibe is like, he's a lucky one. Like he's a lucky one in terms of like he lost his wife, but his wife was much older than him, so it was expected. Like he hasn't had much trauma in his life. He's lucky. Like people, unfortunately for some of us, like that, or good for other people. Like you can be happy for him or not, but like that, plenty of people just have good lives, and he's the one with a good life. So like, what is his motivation? I was like, what do you mean? He's enlightened. He's
I remember
happy.
Reading. I can't remember what the poem was, but I remember reading a poem where someone who was like over 50, and they're like, now that I'm over 50, is like, it's all profit.
Yes.
But like, it's just like, I fucking did it. We're in the black now, baby.
And if somebody believes that life is most fulfilling when there is a purpose, and that purpose can be almost anything. Like I still think about this guy. There's a fucking hot dog shop in Hollywood that I don't even think is there anymore, is it?
That's a good question.
But that man was like, he was so touched when I said that was like the best hot dog I ever had. Like he loved hot dogs. I'm like, that's his purpose in life. He is more enlightened than I am right now. Like he is so happy and so confident and fucking loves his hot dogs. Like that's great. You need a purpose in life. So I do feel like a dangerous thing when you can get older And, you know, maybe it's even, you know, my wife's an occupational therapist, and a lot of that is about, like, you know, learning and getting what your occupation is. That can be the deadliest thing, is to, like, have no purpose in life. Mm-hmm. Whatever
saying,
it is.
The number one killer of old people is retirement?
Is it?
I think it's recliners.
So hobbies and et cetera. So, like,
stairs.
No, it's like they call recliners coffins.
Anyways, I think it's interesting.
That's so dark.
Yeah. Wait, they really do?
They do.
Wait, how do they kill you?
Like, because you're not using your using your muscles. You're not, you know, and muscles go fast when you're older.
I can't remember if I shared this. Did I tell you guys about when I came over to see my dad that right after he'd retired?
No.
He was like, kept trying to retire, and they kept throwing more money at him. He was kind of back and forth, and then COVID hit, and he was in corporate real estate. So, like, that was perfect time to get out when you're fucking.
Get out.
And he had, it was funny because he had been banging the drum about remote work for years before that. He's like, why the fuck do you have people coming into the office? Just fucking let them work from home. Let them do their shit at home. But so anyway, he's like, he retires. I come out to see him, and you know, normally, like, when you go to see your parents, you do the move where you're like, you stay up way late, and then you're like creeping around the house like when you're a kid or whatever. And so it's like 3 a.m. I've been up all night playing video games, and I come out into the living room. My dad, the lights are off. The TV is playing just YouTube clips.
Full, and
he's got his headphones on, so he doesn't wake my wife up. My mom up. And
Freudian.
Then he's just fucking.
You called your mom your wife.
Yeah, I did. Hey, man, I love my wife. Yeah. I love my mom. What do you want?
Ooh, I love my wife.
He's just like in the coffin, essentially, in the recliner. And just huge glowing TV lighting up his face, headphones on, so I'm not hearing a thing. I'm just surprised. And then he's just on his phone playing solitaire.
Oh my God.
At 3 in the morning.
He turned into a Gen Zer.
He was literally just
my
like.
My dad is triple screening it all the time now.
So my friend calls that dopamine maxing.
He was full on dopamine maxing. And I was like, whoa. And then I was like, you know, but then in my head, I'm like, this man worked for fucking 40 years, hoofing it all over the country, fucking clicking PowerPoints. I'm like, he needs 6 months to decompress. He needs just to slough it off. And then it was literally like, you know how they, in a caterpillars, when they go into the cocoon, there's a point where they become liquid.
Yeah.
Like they fully dissolve. Like, and I saw my liquid dad. He was in his liquid. He was literally in a chrysalis. And then he emerged, and now he's doing fucking great. And like, he's doing photography club. He's teaching Bible study classes.
He's
not dopamine maxing it anymore. But he literally, I was like, he's like, Will, I was like his little gamer mom. He's like, Will, I put 10,000 hours into this solitaire game on my phone. Jesus Christ.
He
literally prestige the solitaire.
The danger is to never get out of there.
Yeah. My dad is still liquid.
I was very, very grateful that he did not need the push, but he emerged from the cocoon safely. And now he's a butterfly.
Well, Dale was on the cruise ship because of David Foster Wallace had this whole essay about cruise ships essentially just being coffins for old people. Like, it's just, you go back to the womb and it is like, you're just taken care of floating on this like liquid. And it's just like, there's something
I
like
what you said, Dale's on it because of that, and I know that's because you had the inspiration, but I love the idea that Dale read that essay. He was like, that sounds great.
That sounds awesome. I should do that. So anyways,
Dale goes to porn conventions, he starts eating lobsters.
I think it's hard.
He starts considering lobsters.
I think it's hard, but I think as somebody who has gone back and forth, they're like, ooh, shit, the conceit, like, how do you do it? But like, in my mind, like, that conceit makes it about grandparents as opposed to just being a repeat of dads.
Yeah.
That's why I like it, because I think it's going to push the characters, and you know, none of us are that old, so like, it is I'm finding it interesting and like very forward thinking.
The thing that worries me is, and perhaps I'm oversimplifying my thoughts of what the future of the story is, but like, if every time you meet a kid, they're 10 years older and they don't really need you, it's about you guys realizing that you don't matter anymore and you need to let the next generation do stuff, which is the least active thing that four protagonists could possibly do in an adventure series.
We just need to find something in the story to care about as the character.
Sure.
Is all it is.
That's a beautiful theme. And I actually think that, like, the fact.
I'm sorry, Anthony. That's a beautiful, incredible, truthful theme.
It's a theme that doesn't involve the players at all.
Anthony, that's why bad Annapurna games are bad, by the way. It's because they're like, oh, it's about this theme. It has nothing to do with me interacting with the
app. No, because I don't want to watch 20 minutes before I skateboard. I'm fine with the theme. Just let me do the skateboard.
That's why the best one of those games, fucking hands down, and again, you guys are going to roast me for saying this, that fucking game where you play the old lady walking through the cemetery.
That game sucks.
I love that game.
The graveyard. That
it's because you
sucks.
Want no cutscenes? No,
there
nothing.
Is a cutscene.
What?
You sit down on the thing and you wait for a while and there's a cutscene of her like singing a song and then there's a
it's
one
not
in 20-
a cutscene. You can leave whenever you want.
That
she just
that counts for
down.
All cutscenes.
No, it's not a cutscene. It's not it doesn't interrupt.
Now let me ask you this though. How
there's
much
no
better...
little narrative dissonance, Anthony. It doesn't interrupt the gameplay.
You're both, what if you could pull Throg? It is there's no cutscenes, Anthony, and it's a shitty game. No, I thought you were gonna say flow or whatever the flower one is, because
it's
like
all,
that's
a game
that's
where
pretentious,
just,
but you
fucking
move.
Outer Wilds is the best game.
You're hobbling through the cemetery, and then you sit down on a bench. You think about life. And then when you're ready. Get up and leave.
The best version of that one.
The
is,
guys who make that game hate games.
What's
by the
side scrolling one?
Good
for
them.
Passage. That's the best
Passage.
Version
Look,
of that.
That's short hands. Game. We all hate video games, right?
Jason Rohr made Passage. Passage is great.
Yeah, Passage is that, but good.
To your point, Anthony, I think that the theme of like leave no trace, do no harm is a theme that is interesting because what if our parents had, you know, like internalize that, then we'd be fine.
No, we'd or be not. Just as fucked up as any other generation throughout the history of mankind. Whatever, we'll
and
see.
Then we'd just be like, why didn't they help us more?
Just be the opposite.
I'll give a little bit of insight into, because I just feel like also like the energy of this was like, we're so meditative or thinking about the broader picture. I will say that we're just coming off of Nail House being done. We did batch recording for the first time in a long time, like throughout this whole process. And this was actually the episode where we kind of took a stop to be like, okay, like we're done with the film. Like, what's the process for recording this stuff? So it's going to be more back to essentially where we're recording our episodes and save space like immediately after the episodes, right?
Yeah.
I did have a lot of quick little joke favorite moments I wanted to remember.
Yes.
First of all, we got to talk about Matt's incredible performance in the intro as Robert Shaw doing the Indianapolis monologue, which fucking took me out. It's just Thank this you. Goofy old, it's just like this weird old sailor voice, which is very funny. I liked it quite a bit. Head is you head.
That's a classic.
There was another one I forgot, but I can't remember. It was another one that he says like almost right afterwards.
Surely we have 12 of those by now, right? Like we could make the calendar.
We need to make
us?
The calendar. I also liked this again felt like a very Daryl Henry moment, but Ralph being like, I burned my draft card. And then Dale being like, were you called up? And then like, so you just burned a piece of paper. It didn't matter.
I also love Freddie thinking that he was Ralph momentarily.
Dude, listen, when you're in the drift, sometimes the consciousness is murdered.
I get it.
To me, Beth had the joke of the episode with Herb realizing that his girlfriend is 10 years older.
Oh, my God.
That
was
really 10 years
such
older
an
now.
Insane. That was such an insane joke.
And then I very much like, again, Anthony and I talked about it, Freddie just losing his mind at the bloaters and turning into like a New York guy for a second. In that, my favorite bits were, I'm going to cross my eyes so I can look at two of them. Once.
Is that like a thing you've heard before? You just come up with that. That's insane.
No.
It's just like, I like the idea that's not going to let you look at more boobs.
Yes, it will. Yeah. Be twice as
You'll
many
be double boobs.
Boobs.
Yeah, I guess.
And then specifically because then like Dale is like, wow, look at that. And then Lila's like, you can't just, he's like, well, what can I look at? And like, you can, and Lila says, you can look at whatever you want. Just don't point and say, look at that thing. And anyway, those are my favorite jokes of the episode. So ends the favorite parts section. So yeah, we got some questions in our live listen, which we do every week on our Discord. I don't know why I'm plugging it. I'm like, you can join the Discord. You're already there. Part of the thing.
Or you're a criminal. In
hey,
which case,
which is cooler
you're
than
a
us.
Dirty boy. And that's kind of cool in its own way. Can we hang out or? Phantom Mime has a question.
Go for it.
What is everyone's go-to item to bring to a potluck?
Oh,
well, now it's easy. Now it's ice cream. And just I did ice cream for Easter
Matt,
too.
So this was the move.
I did ice cream for Easter.
Matt became the ice cream director.
The ice cream.
Where he would do with his Ninja Creamy. He would crank out 3 or 4 creams every week, dude.
And like creamy.
I like that.
And he Ninja stopped. And
I brought cream to set. I creamed the crew up.
He was creaming the crew.
He creamed up that
cream.
Creamed
me too, and I'm fucking vegan. I love the cream.
He had all kinds. Matt, give him a rundown of
your
flavors.
Well, for Easter, I did. I did charred banana, I did salted chocolate, and I did strawberry with a hint of balsamic and sweet pistachio pesto. They were all a big hit.
I did
three. When we were remote, I didn't. We were on location for like 2 weeks, so then I stopped. But I pretty consistently did two or three flavors every week for the crew. The favorites of the crew felt like they were dulce de leche with little chocolate crunchies, which was really good. Salted chocolate is just an all-timer. And then my favorite flavor still, which I keep making, there's this toasted rice with the yuzu jelly, which is like my favorite. But anyways, I will say get a Ninja Creamy. I wish Ninja Creamy would sponsor us. Ninja, sponsor us, please, so I can get more of your products, so I can make more ice cream. They have like an icy slushy machine.
Which I heard is like okay.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, damn. Because the Ninja Creamy also makes great milkshakes. But yes, since I've gotten into ice cream, it is so easy to make for potlucks, and it's always a hit because everybody loves ice cream.
Hey.
Nice.
And it's one of the things that doing it yourself, better.
It ruins it.
It ruins actually. Good, like,
yeah, no, literally, my wife doesn't like any other ice cream shop now. Like, we'll go and she's like, because it's just
that's the web of control, Titan.
Does all ice cream, even
I
nice
don't
ice
let
cream
my
places,
wife eat another man's ice cream?
Tell Baskin and Robin to hit the bricks.
Anyways, make your own
31
ice cream.
31
crushed up some red pills into this ice cream.
Yeah.
I'm cream maxing.
Yeah. Cream maxing.
Running.
That's clavicular secret.
Oh, yeah,
dude.
We have an answer to the other one. Yeah.
What is a good potluck?
So, to me, I'll mix it up. I'll do a pizza roll. I'll do, like, Ooh. Maybe a mac and cheese or whatever. But I have to say, the simply the greatest potluck move I've ever seen was we were going to a friend's party, and my wife, Cherish, was like, fuck it, let's just get a shitload of chicken nuggets.
Ooh,
and then we just went to McDonald's and dropped a huge pile of chicken nuggets that's and people good. Flipped the fuck out.
Yeah, really I do Raising Cane's.
There you go.
That's a
good idea.
Full disclosure, I need to do better. I feel bad because normally, realistically, I bring a bunch of beverages to a potluck because I don't like my cooking. And I mean, I barely tolerate it, like, let alone subject it to other people. But I mean, if I had to, I would probably do my mom's sweet potato casserole, but I can't do it like she can. And so I need to make a better effort for my friends. But thankfully, we don't have that many potlucks.
Or friends.
It feels like the potluck thing kind of fell out of favor amongst our...
I mean,
yeah, the panini
that's good for me,
that.
But, yeah. You know, I do, yeah, but whenever it is a you have to bring something, I will
DoorDash
do...
killed the potluck.
I will do Raising
DoorDash
Cane's.
DoorDash killed the potluck party. Can we talk for a second about chicken?
Please do.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, so, okay, it's a long road to get there, but, like, I was looking at... I went to In-N-Out again.
Did you look both ways when you crossed it?
Went to In-N-Out, been to a Chick-fil-A, and you know what it is? What? Just let the Christians run the fast food restaurant.
Okay.
Yeah. Just let
I
the,
hear that.
Just let the Christians run the fast food restaurant.
This is safe space. We can't be judged for this, but those two places are good.
But, like, they're, like, here's...
In-N-Out kind of
No, sucks. No, here's the thing about In-N-Out, actually, it took me a while to appreciate, which is everyone's like, oh, it's a burger. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it better? Like, no. In-N-Out's strength is the fact that it is consistent.
Yes.
It is the same burger that I remember getting at the same price. When I came to LA for school, like almost 20 years ago at this point. And knowing-
I mean, aren't all fast food places consistent?
Yeah,
every Whopper tastes like a Whopper.
No,
yeah.
No. Because no. It's happening all around us, right? McDonald's
it's happening all around us.
McDonald's
Wake
is,
up.
McDonald's is cost cutting all the time. Actually. People talk about the fry formulation changes. They're cost cutting on their nuggets. Burger King's trying to figure it out. Wendy's is
when you talk about fast food, you turn into Tucker Carlson.
We always talk about Freddy's the only one without mental illness on the podcast.
I think we needed to walk that back.
Sure?
No, I'm saying that, like, one of the hardest things to do in our entropic world is consistency and having just the same thing. And I would say even, like, the McDonald's burger. You look at, hey, look at the picture of what the Big Mac looked like in the 80s and tell me that McDonald's hasn't changed. Right.
Oh, I mean, sure. Yeah.
But
over time.
And that time is what kills everything. Time is what making everything shitty.
Right. Oh, wow. It lost 40% of its size.
Exactly.
Since then.
So, Ozempic, dude.
Ozempic.
I mean, I think that was just like literally people were like, yo, we got to stop doing 2000 calorie meals.
Too much. People don't like eating that much. And also it's hurting our bottom line.
Anyway,
I love that this is just I love that Super Size Me was such a thing that it killed the Super Size Me option. And then later it was like, by the way, I'm also an alcoholic.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. All his problems
like,
an alcoholic.
The month that came out, he died.
Oh, yeah.
He took one L and was like, nope.
Yeah, it's like,
I watched the documentary like a couple times and I still remember like the doctor being like, with readings like this, it's almost like you're abusing alcohol or something.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
that's crazy. What McDonald's does to you.
And by the way, here's
We all should have known because they kept talking about like how bad his liver was. Yeah. Like, we all should be like, wait.
Like, also, like, the very McDonald's first thing he does is he like eats a Big Mac and then vomits. I'm like, I've eaten a Big Mac and I don't vomit immediately. What is going on?
That dog's wild in context. Anyways, right, what were we talking about? What was the question?
Yes. It was about what you bring to potluck and who cares.
But Christian should, like, hey.
Yes, Christian should run
if
faster.
If Christianity could just take and more fast else. Food and nothing else, like, I think yeah. we could. And also, like, supposedly.
And then just spend, and you know what? Also, and
just treat their employees right.
The money you get making the good food, spend it on making more of the food.
There you go.
That's all you get to spend. Here you get to run all the fast food restaurants.
But you have to spend it on new menu items.
If you want to spread the word, put it on the inside of the cups.
Call the new menu items. It's not Adam and Steve. I don't care.
I want Christian-run fast food restaurants, but with a Taco Bell mentality.
Jesus really did live Moss, if you think about it.
He really embodied it.
Verve on the Rocks asks, as ardent game players and game lovers, are there any game or games that you hate or simply won't play? For example, I won't play Monopoly or Yahtzee. I think they could take a long walk off a short pier.
I've had such a bad experience with Apples to Apples, and the problem wasn't necessarily the game, which fundamentally, I just kind of am not interested in the games that are like, here's a quirky, funny thing that you can say to make yourself sound quirky and funny. Yeah. What's funny? The comparison of two opposites. We're gonna put
I'm
two
sorry they
concepts.
Hacked our job. Like, I'm sorry that they proved that our job can be done by throwing two.
But I think
together.
The problem was, and the reason why I had a bad experience was again.
Frey doesn't eat apples. He could just like scream. Can we talk about chicken? Talk for 30 minutes.
Well,
he doesn't
eat
apples.
Here's apples. I played it once, and it was like someone's birthday party, and it was like a 30-person group, and I'm like, that was
incredible.
It was at the height of apples to apples, like. That was all everyone was talking about.
We should fucking do apples to apples on Squid Game next season.
That's really funny.
One time,
fuck, we're still doing shorts. That'd be a good short.
One time I played apples to apples at a Christmas party with all Republicans, and it made it funny again.
She was like really, yeah.
It was so like not funny that, but they were like laughing their asses off. Oh, like it was crazy. Yeah.
That's really good.
The first time I played apples to apples was at a college party. Like I went to go visit my friend and like, it was like the most fun I had that night. Most of it was because we were drinking, but I did play with a group of friends and I had a friend that did a bit that I thought was funny, but nobody else did. And then it stopped, like the game stopped, but like they just took it really seriously, like it was a real game and like refused to break that. So it was like he would like look at each card and like say it and then analyze like which is the objectively funniest. And then he would always make sure people like showed how many cards they had so you could see who was winning and all that stuff for like the whole time.
That rules.
And, like, I thought that was fucking great. It's like I'm just playing by the rules, right? You guys came right at me by the rules.
Here's a question. Would you rather play apples to apples with all Republicans or Cards Against Humanity with all progressive people?
100% apples to apples with all Republicans.
100%.
He just asked if you want to have fun or feel bad. Those are two questions you just asked right now.
I don't like Wavelength because I can't think in those terms.
Ooh, I really like that game.
What's Wavelength?
We played it once.
We did,
like,
yeah.
You guess color.
Yeah.
No, it's not color. It's you get a spectrum of something.
Oh, you're right.
You get good to evil, for example, and then you spin this wheel randomly and it lands on a particular spot on that spectrum that only you can see. So then you have to describe or give an example of something that falls in the spectrum that you want them to guess. Because
oh, I see.
Shield
so you're trying to get them into that. That's fun.
Yeah, I can't do it. Every time I'm like, all the way left, all the way right.
That's some black and white thinking. You should talk to your therapist about
that. I did. And she said, stop playing your Wavelength.
That was the solution? Don't play this game that everyone loves?
I won't play. I think we've joked about it a lot, but then if you really think about it, like, I have not played since we've joked about it. It's like, I will not play any sort of, like, coup or Avalon or Resistance or Secret Hitler anymore because it's
Secret
just
Hitler. Can I say the
because it's just I feel like for my own like sanity I need to like not
yeah you're a psychopath
a part
and
of
I love
me that
it.
Comes
and
out and enough it. People that I respect have seen me at my lowest in those games and like I'm good at them like I win a lot when I play them.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I don't like that
cost?
I win at it.
Huh? At what cost?
Yeah.
At what cost?
Significant cost. To
significant cost to yeah I've lost too much playing those games. I won't play them.
You can't tell me my problem with Secret Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much going on. I'm like, there's a chancellor and there's a thing in the group and they got, I'm like, it's too much.
Yeah. Ever since they made Werewolf, every spin on Werewolf is just kind of like, let's add more things, which I guess makes it different.
I did like Blood and Clock Tower though.
Blood and Clock Tower is way too fucking complicated. I don't think anybody's ever played a game of it, honestly. Because it's too much for one person to keep track of, so you just have
to
start lying.
You do need a strong DM.
You need like a DM, essentially.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
I'll tell you one game I'll never play. Russian Roulette.
Okay.
I won't risk shooting myself in the head.
You have played World Championship Russian Roulette,
it's
though.
It's true.
It's true.
But Anthony, that's not a real Russian Roulette,
it's
though.
It's not. No,
has
it's
anybody
not.
Made like a perfect, like, because I bet you that would sell at a board game store.
Just Russian right gun with
yeah.
one bullet
no,
in it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. with a, like a foam bullet. Just like a gun that works, because the problem with like
that's how I came up with World Championship Russian Roulette. It was just a Nerf gun with one dart in it.
But like, but
they sell those. They're called Nerf guns.
But usually you can see the fucking dart.
Not if you're holding it up to your head.
Yeah, but everybody can see it. I'm just saying a gun.
You're right. You have $1 million idea, which is what if a Nerf gun where you couldn't see the dart?
Hey, I'm not fucking Shark Tank. I'm not trying to change the world. I'm not trying to make millions of dollars. I'm trying to make a couple $100,000 on a simple, easy product. I'm saying if I went to a board game store right now and said it was just fucking Russian roulette, it was like a real looking gun. It's like, it looks real, but is
oh,
it?
Oh, it's a real looking gun, too.
Yeah, looks real.
That'll get through.
Looks real, but is it? And fucking had like one die in there just to let you know it's a game. I fucking buy it.
Oh my god!
One dice.
I fucking buy it.
357 special.
That's
fucking
so funny.
Chrome 357.
Dude, and the difficulty level, and then the difficulty level is just how hard it shoots at you.
Well,
so
no,
like
it's a D6, and that's how many times you have to pull it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
yes,
like that.
That's the game I made.
It's just like that shocking game that people played in high school.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a game where you all hold on to a stick or a rod, and whoever holds on the, I don't remember.
Yeah, everybody know what you're talking about. Yeah.
What was the rod that's electrified? Was this like a proper game or like
a
crazy?
Yeah, it was a proper game. Oh, okay. And it hurt pretty bad.
Yeah, I love, there's a certain type of boys game that's just hurt.
Yeah.
So like,
it's just hurt.
The two that I remember in my all boys school was, they were doing one where you just put your knuckles on the table
bloody
and then you flick the quarters and start. The other one we did was,
you guys did bloody knuckles with quarters?
Yeah, you flick the quarters down, and then it's like, if you flick the quarters really hard, it'll scrape your knuckles.
That's really funny, because at my school, they were just like, you just punch the other guy's knuckles as
hard
as
possible. Oh yeah, we did that too. Yeah, you just hit each other on the knuckles. Yeah.
But the other one we did was, you would sit across from each other with your legs open, and you would have like a water bottle filled with rocks.
Called it Basic Instinct.
and it's like essentially the bottle flipping game. But all you're trying to do is you throw the bottle as high as you can, and you can't move it. You're trying to hit the other guy's nuts.
Nice.
That's why wars happen.
We had one called Rock Game. Everybody stands back to back in like a tight circle with a handful of rocks, and then you shout 1, 2, 3, rock. Throw all the rocks in the air and run. And if you get hit with a rock, you've lost the rock game.
That's awesome.
There's probably like a crazy sort of Baraka type movie you could do that's just like intercutting, like, just, you know, the whatever, our young fine men just dying in war, but then also just cutting when they're not in war.
War square.
What you're doing is like when they're not in war, it's just like jumping off bridges and dying in stupid ways, getting car accidents, fucking like ghosting on top of cars or whatever. Be like, hey, you know what? They're going to find a way.
Yeah.
They're going to find a way to fucking do it.
So those are my favorite type of games, is the, like, the not safe games. My least favorite type of games, to be clear, I will still play these games if somebody asks me to, because I want to be included, but I don't like resource gathering games.
Fair.
Such as where?
Such as Catan. I don't even like Ticket to Ride.
Oh yeah, I don't either.
Because I have a hard time focusing on multiple things at once. So it's like, I can build the longest train easy. But like, when I have to do all the other things, I don't like that. I don't like that I'm having to think about all the other things too.
So Beth, you do touch on one of the things that I think is really funny, which is about board game design. It's something I've heard, which is that supposedly the best designed board games are ones where you feel like, I just didn't quite have enough resources to do everything I wanted to do on my turn. And so that's like the tension. You're always wanting more. I hate that.
Yeah.
I want to do everything I want to do. And I sit there and be like, I don't like that tension.
Honestly, I think that's why like card games are so popular, is because like it's entirely on you. It's not about the resources. It's about like, did I build my deck good? Was I smart from the very beginning? Am I a genius? And then you're not and you lose and it's fine. But no, I hate resource games too. I think you bring up a good point. I mean, you did last for the first season too, which is that D&D, and I think by extension a lot of board games, are just inherently not ADHD friendly when it's about balancing multiple different ways of scoring and winning. And like, if the best way to play is to be doing math while you're playing, I'm just kind of like, ugh.
Another question?
Yeah, I saw one in the chat that I thought was fun.
Hit us.
someone at,
Anthony, you have your name so big on this board game.
I know, I don't like it. I literally was like,
that's my favorite thing about that.
The
game.
Only two things I want is I want you to call the game Spin Click Bang or Spin Click Boom, and then two, don't put my name on the cover because I don't feel like I actually did that much. And they were like, okay, and then they did that. They called a World Championship Pressure Roulette by Anthony Birch.
Who gets a buy line
Anthony,
on a
right
fucking...
now? We could release. It'd be so easy. We got our producer here. We could re-release right now. Anthony Birch presents Real Russian Roulette. Semicolon, not a real gun. It's a fucking gun. That comes with one six-sided die. It looks real, but it's not. And it fucking has a little dart in it.
It probably would have sold if it came with like a cute gun peripheral. That's why cash and guns sold so well, even though you could just use it with your fingers.
Lil Indiza asks, people seem to think that getting old sucks, but is there anything you are looking forward to about being oldish?
No, being older rules.
Yeah, being old rules.
No.
No.
I'm trying to think.
I mean, I like where I am right now. This age is nice because, like, you have freedom to do stuff.
Oh, yeah,
presuming
yeah.
a certain amount of...
And next year, you'll be able to legally drink, Anthony.
Oof, that's going to be
fun. Anthony, that's a good point. There's definitely a bell curve.
Yeah.
And we're somewhere along it.
I don't think when, like, I hit 90, I'm going to unlock a new skill that rules in a different way.
No, I completely disagree. Yeah. I think I'm stoked to be 90. I'm stoked to get all the way up
I always hear about when they're like, you hear sometimes these stories of the older folks, and they're like, you know, it's like, I'm done. There's no more, you know, nothing left to look forward to. I've lived a good life. And I'm like, bro. There's a new Call of Duty hasn't come out yet.
Mm-hmm. No,
what will happen to the first gamer
every time
generation?
Somebody says like that, I'm just like, have you just fucking looked at the latest releases? Like, just check
yeah.
out what's
have
coming
out
in the next 4 months.
Metacritic, dude?
See, to me, I'm just
coming
like,
soon?
To answer the question seriously, I think what I'm looking forward to, like, I want to make it to retirement. I want to be able to just, like, look at a tree all day. Or, like, fucking just be like, I'm going to read a ton. And I'm going to just listen to music. Do whatever, right? Like, that obviously... sounds like a lot of fun. I've had this thought several times. Like, I'll have my little, like, wake up at 3 a.m. and be like, oh my God, I'm a human being who's alive in a body of flesh and bone, and someday I will die.
Sucks.
What's that going to be like? Then this is my move. I think about it. This is the reason I want to be, like, conscious for the act of dying. I don't want to die in my sleep or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
The thought before you die of, I don't have to send any more emails. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm fucking out of the
that
game.
That inbox
there's
is
like,
done.
I just want that one moment before you die where you're like, there is literally and truly nothing else I have to do.
Oh, hell yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That to me, I'm looking forward to.
Do you guys ever spiral thinking about nothingness?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah? I mean, a little bit.
All the time.
Yeah.
I'm spiraled by it, but I'm also comforted by it.
Why?
I don't know. I feel like I have a lot of stuff going on in my brain. Sometimes I wish I like could just like calm my thoughts down a little bit.
Oh, I think it's calm.
Yeah. Sometimes
Anthony, see, we did a little movie where you can take a phrase like "we're all gonna die" and it could be one of fear, but then by the end it's just an acceptance that we are all in the same boat together, and that is comforting to me.
Yeah, I should watch that movie.
We are all just.
You know, I'll tell you.
We're all just specks of sand, and it doesn't matter.
Go ahead. I'll tell you, Anthony. Here's the way that I've figured it out. It's like, what's it like after? Probably a lot like before.
Yeah.
That scares me.
Nah, it doesn't scare me.
That's bad, because
cool.
It's nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
The only thing that
nothing
I do
you remember.
Yeah.
15% of my brain at all given time, at any given moment, is just programmed to just hold back the thought of like nothing.
Now,
it's just
on,
like
here's a question,
holding
here's a question.
It's Hodor just fucking,
here's
just
a question,
the fucking door.
But what if there's 1% you turn into a bug?
No, that's the thing. The thing that gives Hodor his strength to keep those thoughts at bay.
What if
is
I become a
that,
fucking cool bug?
Is the fact that the closest thing we have approximating death is if you go under for surgery. And when you go under for surgery, it feels like instantaneous. You have a last memory and then bleh, it happened. So if at any point in the future, anything exists after the nothing ever in the history of the universe ever, it'll feel immediate to me.
Yeah, that's true.
So that I find 1% comforting.
Here are the thoughts I have that help me with the nothingness. One, I find the fundamental fact of consciousness to be absolutely baffling and weird and deeply mysterious in ways that we still have yet to comprehend in even the slightest way. So, like, I'm comforted by that. I'm comforted by the deep mystery of life. Because I prefer the mystery of an ambiguity of not knowing what happens. To
every
the,
Benoit Blanc movie, you're like, ugh!
But then also, specifically, I this is also very stupid, but I'm like, the only thing worse than dying and there not being anything would be living forever and then eventually being trapped somewhere in a conscious body for all time.
Yeah,
oh, yeah
if somebody
sure.
closes
oh, yeah.
you in a closet or something.
The idea would be fucking change. Every 75 years, completely new type of existence. You've got to learn that shit all over
but
again.
But then I always think about, I guess the logical conclusion of that is like, well, if living forever would be a nightmare, then the afterlife would be a nightmare. Because what's different about the afterlife?
That's true.
It's a different, entirely different state of consciousness, Matt.
And which became exactly.
And that's what I'm saying. If you call
it nothingness, because I don't know what it is, right? I can't know. It's like
I love not knowing.
Yeah,
I love it.
To get to the being old, like, I guess, like, I'm not stressed about getting older because, like, what I like to do,
I've been doing it my whole life.
Yeah, my whole life, like, I found the things I love to do. Like, most of my worry comes from, like, honestly, it comes from the people I care about. Like, that's my worry. Like, and as stupid as it is, I just remember not saying that, like, I've fucking, like, peaked enlightenment or anything. But I will say I'm a pretty simple person in terms of, I remember my now wife, when she was my girlfriend, I turned 21. I walked into a grocery store. And I was like, I can buy a beer now. And I looked down and, like, some girls walked past me and I looked like shit. I was like, I don't care. And I was like, you know what? That's fine. My life's good. I'm like, that's it. That was it. At that point, I was like, I don't care anymore. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm fine with myself. Like, and since that day of 21, I've pretty much been that this whole time.
That's why Matt never reads the Reddit for anything he's ever worked on ever.
And that's why
he's
Matt,
just so secure.
And that's why Matt will never be
I'm not secure. Yeah, true. But, like, I'm not concerned on the outside. Like, getting older, I'm like, I don't know, I'll get older. Like, I've heard someone was like, what's great about getting older is like, oh, you don't care anymore. And you'll be like, whatever. Like, and I'm like, I don't know, I'm kind of already there on that thing. So I'm mostly concerned about, like, my health. Like, I want to live long enough to, like, see Dorothy grow up. That's my concern.
I'm more afraid of, like, dying and not being able to take care of my kids.
Yes.
Or becoming, like, so physically incapacitated that I can't take care of my kids.
God, check your butts.
Yeah.
Check them butts.
Check that prost.
Yep.
Get that prost.
The prost and the fucking colon.
The colon, the
they
nards.
They give and they take it.
The guts.
You got to squeeze the nards.
Anything that's good about being having a penis.
Scope the
could kill you.
Yeah. Scope out the colon,
mm-hmm.
Poke the prost, grip the nards.
Yeah, I guess I'm scared of, like, not getting old sometimes. Like, you know, I just worry about that. I think, like, anybody does. But then I also worry about being old and being, like, a burden to people. And that would be scary. But I think what I'm looking forward to is maybe reaching, like, a further sense of security and enlightenment with myself that I could have a lot of time for myself and not spend it worrying or doing stuff that's not productive.
I'm with you on the not wanting to be a burden to other people. I think I'm going to be like Paul Atreides. I'm just going to walk into the fucking desert.
I can't wait to be a burden on people.
No, I don't want to be a burden.
I fucking carried so many motherfuckers my whole life. About time.
Look back at the footprints. We're looking forward. Time for your footprints now.
Time for your footprints.
I'm getting the piggyback ride. Let's go.
Let's go.
Wipe my butt.
All right. Beth, do you want to take us out?
Oh, I didn't think about this time.
You don't have to.
Wait, this
it's
is coming out next
this is
week.
Space,
this is a safe space.
This is a safe space.
I guess we'll know by the time this comes out what happened.
Whether we died? Oh, yeah. That's crazy.
Tuesday.
Well, my immortal voice will remind you that if I am still alive on April 29th, I am doing a show at Dynasty Typewriter, and you can get tickets to the live stream or in person if you happen to be in Los Angeles. But if
better
you're
move
not,
fast. It's
Sunday,
kind of
Sunday,
moment.
Sunday. Wait, no, Saturday.
Yeah, it's a Wednesday.
Wednesday.
It's
Wednesday,
your birthday.
Wednesday.
Actually.
Birthday.
And it's at 9:30 p.m. You might be like, wait, I live like far away, and that's really late for me. That's okay because you can watch the live stream anytime within 7 days. It's kind of like the movie The Ring. Okay,
Ringu,
and that once
Ringu,
you see
Ringu.
It, you'll want to show it to your friends.
Yes.